Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
Hi, I'm Tian Wei, and today we are in Yuelu Academy in Changsha, one of the most ancient academies in China's history. This is the place where some of the most important historical debates took place in China. This is also the place where many of the respected figures in China's history studied throughout the centuries. The reason I'm here has a lot to do with the time we are in. Once again, critical juncture with complexity, confusion, and even the possibility of conflicts. So what can we learn through history? What can we learn from an academy with history? I try to find out the answers. The Yuelu Academy has witnessed a history of more than 1,000 years. It's where great scholars assembled, and that tradition has carried on to today. On a typically busy morning at the Academy, you see a mixture of students, scholars, and tourists, all fascinated by it. I met Peter Dickmanson and Beibei Zhang, two scholars from the Academy's History Department. Coming from very different backgrounds, they are now working closely on both academic research and on using new technologies such as AI as tools to rediscover history. With them, I began to have a better understanding of this institution's strength and inner charm.
So here we are at the Temple of Confucius. Confucius himself is the symbol of the educational ideal, not for the exams, not for a career or jobs or becoming famous, but for one's own development and enrichment.
Okay, so in our ceremony for Confucius, we are similarly, we don't have any ranks. So we regard all ourselves, regardless being teachers or students, all students of Confucius.
And we are all teachers of one another.
Yes. Learn from each other.
三人行必有我师。
Exactly. And I frequently tell my students, think of yourself as someone preparing to teach. As you get information, you prepare to teach others, just like the ideal teacher in Chinese tradition.
You are
Chinese
also
tradition.
In the ceremony?
Yes.
We are all in the ceremony.
Was it fun?
It is fun. It's very moving. It has older elements and also newer elements to it. So. Yeah.
Standing here, you're looking at one door after another and his students. Confucius, I guess, will have a second thought about what the world is like today.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah. Though the Academy has a storied history of hosting Confucian scholars, it was the debates on this site that have marked this place in China's history. Most prominently, a debate during the Song Dynasty, at the time a scholar named Zhang Shi lectured at the Academy. He invited many to debate, among them Zhu Xi, one of the most accomplished Confucian scholars in history. They debated day and night. It's said that the audience admiring their talents gathered in the academy from all over the country. The number of visitors not only exceeded the seating capacity, as many of them traveled by horse, which drank up the water of a nearby pond.
So here is the lecture hall. Mm-hmm. This is where the famous debate between Zhu Xi and Zhang Shi happened.
Oh, I see. Legend, this is something I always want to visit.
Yeah, according to the legend, they have been debated for 3 days and three nights.
But what is the content of this debate?
Well, it was a very complex debate about one of the very important texts in Confucianism, the Doctrine of the Mean, or the Zhongyong. And that text talks a great deal about the nature of the human mind as it encounters information and the way that the mind responds. And one of the things that Confucian scholars in the Song Dynasty were very interested in is just what is the proper way for the mind to respond to information and to correct the nature of one's mind. And these two scholars had very different views about that, how that should happen.
It must be very exciting, I guess. All the details become extremely important.
Yes, very important.
That's
and different schools forming.
And also the nature of classics, isn't it, that you read into it?
Yeah, open to, for discussion, open for interpretation as well. And one interesting point is that the two scholars are from two different regions, one from Fujian and another one from Sichuan, and meeting at this academy. It's sort of an early version of scholarly exchange cross-regionally. And also, this plaque also indicates this idea of...
Dao Nan Zheng Mai.
Yeah, it's a plaque bestowed by an emperor of Qin Dynasty, but it's describing the idea that how new Confucianism spread from the north part of China to the south part of China, and become really influential to the Chinese culture, generally speaking.
Oh, so this is where all the things happened. Wow. Many of topics they debated then continue today. For example, the meaning of learning, about how to learn, and about the implications of technology to enhance learning. Working here, researching on history, what have you learned, Peter?
Well, one of the things that you learn when you study academy history is that the academies in China are centers for people to meet, learned people to meet from all over China. And this was true with the ancient academies in Europe and Britain and North Africa and India. They were meeting places for scholars from everywhere. And so, for example, with the famous meeting here between Zhu Xi and Zhang Shi, two of the most famous scholars from the Song Dynasty, you have an exchange of different views and a kind of discussion and debate and a diversity of opinion, and that the academy is the center of this type of scholarly exchange.
You know, these two are so keen to discuss with each other, and they spend like days debating on and their understandings of classics, and they attract a crowd, which the tale is that our poor hair was dried by their horses. But on the other hand, I'm also very impressed by the fact that they also cultivate great friendship with each other. And this is, I think, what we learned a lot from the history of academy as well. So we have diversity, we are different people, but we can care for each other personally.
This is very enticing even today, I guess, because we have so many debates, sometimes not necessarily real debates, but rhetorical wars. How do you see the differences between debates, real debates, vis-a-vis rhetoric wars?
One very important part of debate is respecting the person whose ideas are different from yours, and also taking pleasure in the interaction. Part of the record that we have is of these two writing poems about their close friendship.
Not just decoration about the wars.
Exactly, exactly.
I think this is also why the problem is so complicated, just to assume that we don't know the ultimate answer. We are just learning through the process. Mm-hmm. This is why the question is so complicated, because this is many things are still under debate. But if you just want to persuade someone else that you have the ultimate truth, then I think that's more likely to be a rhetorical debate. Mm-hmm. And the real debate should be like advancing each other's thinking. And actually, there are research showing that Zhuzhang debate actually advances both their intellectual development in a way.
Earlier, the academy has been embracing the idea of creating more academic freedom and space, and emphasizing on the nature of learning rather than what the system has always been throughout China's feudal dynasties, which is an exam-oriented education system. So, of course, today there's also enormous amount of debates about this. What is the purpose of learning? How to learn? What is the best way? What do we need in terms of talents? How do you see this debate reflected in both the history and the present today here in this academy?
As you say, that is a long tradition, and one of the central themes in academies was resisting the kind of rigid examination learning to prepare for an exam in order to get a job, earn a salary, that the discourse of the academy was always pushing away from that and thinking of learning for its own sake, which was very much what scholars like Zhu Xi emphasized, that we do not learn simply to get a job. We learn to transform ourselves and to educate ourselves. This becomes even more important when we think about the fact that we do not really know what the future will bring. Mm-hmm. So we're training students for an unknown future, not for jobs that are predictable and clear, but for developing their own internal resources for an unknown future.
But is it pragmatic today? I mean, Beibei, you could hear arguments like, well, the academy like Yue Lu Academy in ancient times, it could enjoy free land, you know, on which the students could do farming, they can have a okay life, at least as an academic, not necessarily have to worry about the livelihood. But today, the students have to graduate from the university, from the academy, go out for a job, right, to have a family, and they need to have their own way of making a living. So is it pragmatic that we are nurturing the students with these kind of thoughts about what you call the nature of learning?
But on the other hand, this is also relevant to one of the things that is always in our mind is what is actually the purpose of humanity, because humanity training supposedly is benefiting not only for oneself but also for others, because our like Zhang Shi, like our master teacher or our dean of teaching, he used to suggest that our purpose of the academy is Chuan Dao Ji Ming, so to transmit the way to assist people. So this way is, in my understanding, is much related to humanities. We can learn from humanities what make us humans and what make us being happy as humans. And this is, I think, what is always on my mind, how to train the students.
That has always been the challenge in education. Yes. And that if one of the things that we find when we go back and read materials from the Song Dynasty or the Ming Dynasty is the people teaching face the exact same challenges that we do of students who need to go out and get a job and survive, but also where you want to transmit values, you want to transmit ways of different ways of cultivating yourself.
There were really historical records talking about that internal struggle.
Zhu Xi writes a lot about the process of reading. How do we read a text? How do we concentrate? How do we focus? And so Zhu Xi is a very smart person. He knows that we can't ignore the examination system, but that in training for the examination system, in training to go out and get a job, there are ways we can do this that go deeper than just memorizing text.
Really? I guess yes. All the parents that are watching our program today have their ears wide open right now. How did Zhu Xi do it?
Well, it's of course never as easy as it seems, but focusing, concentrating when you read. We have many distractions now, and in Zhu Xi's time, people had also many distractions.
Really? They also had mobile phones.
Well, they had print. They had the growth of printing, which meant a lot of materials, a lot of books around, people trying to figure out which books to read. Zhu Xi's point was you should focus on the basic text of Confucianism. When you read with your full concentration.
Beibei, what about for you? You know, how do you see, quote-unquote, pragmatism vis-a-vis idealism, which has always been a topic for many, you know?
Yeah. What you decided is useful in your life is actually quite related to the information you can gather. And with the explosion of digital and technology, we have so much information, but it's similar in the history. In Song Dynasty, the printing technology was exploded. And so one of the things is that many practical knowledge cannot guide you what you really want to read, what you really want to achieve in your life. And I do believe humanities has some answer to that.
We are coming to a very interesting point with, you know, not only ChatGPT and GPT-4 and probably 5 artificial intelligence, and also the technology is transforming, you know, how society will eventually function. This is a critical time that all of us learn about what they did with the last, industrial revolution, and the one before the last, isn't it?
Yes. Well, the problem, as Baby says, of information technology developing and changing raises challenges for us. But we have faced these challenges before in the Song Dynasty or in the Ming Dynasty. Mm-hmm. A lot of my research on the Ming Dynasty is looking at how people dealt with the problem of the increase in printing, the increase in materials being published with different levels of truth in them and different types of opinions, and how people face this, how political systems faced the idea of multiple centers of information that emerged. And so I think the important thing to think about with the rise of ChatGPT and these other technologies is we have been here before. This is part of the
There's
human story.
There's nothing quote-unquote new, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Nothing new under the sun.
So what can we learn? Because you've been doing a lot of digitalization of history records. I'm sure you have the richest resource to look into. What have been some of the answers they give us? Or shall I say the answers they were trying to look for?
I think it's actually quite relevant, like as I described, because we are able to study a larger group of people. So we try to understand the relationship between individual and the society. So I think we can learn from that. And also there are different layers of humans' decision. So this is a very interesting procedure to see how individuals, like our identities, was affected by the whole society thought. And then because of the explosion of information, it becomes more and more complicated, because we do not only have Chinese classics, we also have Western classics. We also have like modern technology. So which way we should follow is actually we can learn from what actually like our predecessors had made their decision and what actually they end up with.
What decision they made? Can you give me an example?
I think at least, the flourish of academies in the Song Dynasty is actually sort of related to the printing technology. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, there are also a lot of social changes, but one of the things is exactly because the printing technology brings possible that more ordinary people can access to knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then there is a question about why you want to acquire this knowledge, why you want to be like a highly educated. Do you really want to get a high official position, or you really want to do something either for yourself or for others? Mm-hmm. So academy is sort of some of the answers.
Recently, we have seen a revival of studies in China, of tradition, of traditional literature, scripts, ancient culture, even ancient folk customs, all of this, a revival of that. What is the nature, with your observation so far, of this revival?
I think studying Chinese tradition, studying Chinese culture, adds richness to life, adds a certain other dimension to life. And also thinking about it in terms of world tradition and thinking about how we represent Chinese traditions to the rest of the world? Mm. How do we think comparatively? I was just teaching a class yesterday in which we were talking about a very famous play, Mu Danting, Peony Pavilion, which is written at almost exactly the same time as Romeo and Juliet in England. And so we should be thinking, the whole world knows Shakespeare and Romeo and Juliet. The whole world does not know about Mu Danting, which is, in my opinion, a much better play. And that we can think that we're sort of, on the one hand, we're enriching people's lives in China. On the other hand, we're presenting more of Chinese tradition to the world.
Mm-hmm. And what is the point of presenting Chinese tradition to the world?
Yeah, I think this is also what I am keeping asking myself, because I automatically thinking it's important. But one of the reasons is that I think, because we are trying to somehow make a division between tradition and modern, and sometimes East and West. But actually, I'm trying to argue that is that division that clear? And also, especially sometimes we even like make it make equivalent between Western and modern. But actually, this is not actually the case. And also, as I said earlier, I think modern higher education emphasizes too much less on humanities, which I think is a problem of a global like problem. And this is what I'm thinking. I think we have a rich study on humanities in Chinese tradition, and this is, I do think this is definitely something we can really contribute to the world civilization.
That's a very good point, what you have just said, whether West equals to quote-unquote modern or modernity, and very similar logic apply to many other questions as well. Mm-hmm. But talking about this, what is the purpose? So what is the goal? Why do we do that? Why is it important?
I think it's important for thinking about, on the one hand, thinking about our individual identity. Who are we as people? And that's very, very complicated for all of us. Bebe grew up in China, went and lived in the UK for a while. I also grew up in China, lived outside of China for a long period of time. Thinking about
your grandparents are missionaries
yes,
to China.
My grandparents were missionaries in Henan and also in Beijing and Tianjin. And so I think for each person, thinking about their identity is part of thinking about what is their culture, what is it, what do we mean by modern China, what do we mean to be a what does it mean to be a modern Chinese person? As Bebe is saying, being modern does not mean being more Western. There are several different ways of thinking about modernity, and the past offers us a rich toolbox of things we can pull out to use in thinking about that.
You are working here in the Yuelu Academy. I would say this is such a, you know, ideal place to do your research about Chinese history. Every time when you pass through this hall and some of the other debate buildings, I really wonder, you know, how is it likely to enrich your courage to be able to meet face to face, right up to some of the questions that we have been discussing. Maybe Bebe go first.
Sure.
Bebe today is even wearing a special wardrobe for us.
Thank you. So yeah, I think the environment makes a lot of difference. As I said earlier, when I was first here, and the environment gave me a strong impression, because we are actually living or working in history, and I think one thing is that to think about how modern disciplines made us think in such ways and trained us in such ways, but then look back and thinking that these historical figures didn't have that constraints. They actually, to some extent, they can think more freely than us. They can think anything they concerned, history, philosophy, or even daily lives.
Very interesting. It's such a pleasure talking to both of you.
Same here.
All the best.
Thank you very much.
I want to come back.
Please come back again.
Welcome, welcome.
Okay.
Truly welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
This is certainly a worthwhile trip to the Yuelu Academy in Changsha. That's all the time we have for today. If you'd like to know more, search World Insight or check out our YouTube channel. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Tian Wei. On behalf of my team in Changsha and in Beijing, thanks for being with us. Bye for now.